This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Today is the International Day of Education, and this year's theme is Changing Course, Transforming Education. It's therefore an opportune time to explore the opportunities we have to reshape the current education system into one that better prepares our youth to join the workforce of a dynamic economy. Under the 12th Malaysia Plan, the government has emphasized that technical and vocational education and training, or TVET, will be the game changer in developing human capital. So what are the ingredients of an effective TVET framework? Joining me to discuss this today are Andrew Pereira, the CEO of General Assembly Malaysia, and Daniel Birnbeck, Executive Director of the Malaysian German Chamber of Commerce, MGCC. Gentlemen, good morning. Thanks so much for joining me today.
My pleasure.
Now, TVET has for the longest time been seen as the stepchild of the education system. It's the other option for those who are unable to make the grade for the academic track. I want to start with you, Andrew. Do you think that the events of the pandemic have made people more open-minded to the potential of TVET?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, before I talk about the mindsets, a little bit about the realities of how the pandemic has affected TVET. I think we are all aware of the fact that graduate employability has become something that is more challenging as a result of the pandemic. Anything that improves the possibility of someone finding a career, I think, is something that it's something that a lot of people entering the education system, especially the post-secondary education system, care about. And there's research that shows, especially in more recent years, that the number one factor that people consider as they consider moving into jobs and picking an educational path is actually the career prospects associated with that path. So it is something that people care about a lot. I don't think people are as aware in Malaysia of what the career prospects are when it comes to TVET options. However, there's a lot of research that shows that TVET actually in Malaysia results in higher employability than the traditional tertiary education system.
So that's sort of what's driving this interest in TVET at the moment, the fact that unemployment is going up. So people are looking at how do we get more people into careers, and TVET is seen as that new option.
Yeah, and many of the careers, you know, just to add to that, many of the careers that are increasing in demand. So for instance, even as unemployment went up during the pandemic, the number of job openings for digital technical roles actually tripled. So, that should give you a sense of where demand is shifting now. And a lot of these roles tend to be quite technical and vocational in nature.
I want to turn to you, Daniel. Germany has a long tradition of vocational education, and it's a popular choice for German youth seeking a path to employment. I'm curious why there seems to be less of a distinction between vocational and academic education in Germany compared to, say, here in Malaysia.
Yeah, that's touching a very delicate point, of course. In Germany, and similar to Malaysia, parents tend to try to send their kids to the highest possible education, which usually is the university education, the academic career. Every parent wants the child to be prospering and as a doctor and a lawyer and an engineer. But a significant difference that Germany differentiates from many other countries that have vocational training systems is the permeability of the vocational sector to the academic sector. So it's not a dead-end street. It is not a single-track thing where you can never venture into the academic part. In fact, in Germany, you can. Because if you achieve the highest possible certificate of a vocational training, which is the German Industry Meister, or a Meister title, Master in English, then this is accepted as a bachelor degree. So that means that you have an equal education that allows you to continue in a master's career in a university. So you can later in your life be able, and you will be allowed to go over into an academic career and become a doctor and a professor of engineering later in your life. That, of course, makes it absolutely more attractive and not second class. It is a separate way. It is maybe the more the hands-on, more the practical way of education. but it is not a dead end stream. And it's not a choice that you have to make at age 18, academic or non-academic, and that's it for your life. It is something that we really try to advocate also here in Malaysia, to allow this transition by inserting another level of the National Occupational Skills Scheme, the NOST, which currently ends at NOST level 5, and it needs to have a NOST level 6 to reflect this master of technical vocational education, and then you can jump over to an academic career. That would make a huge difference for parents and for the school leavers.
I see. So it's really the flexibility of those two options. It's not one or the other. It's not a binary choice. It's just different pathways to get to one outcome, whatever that may be. How would you contrast that to how it's seen here, Andrew, and just how TVET sits in our education system at the moment?
Yeah, so it is quite different. I think there are a few things that stand out. I think one thing which, you know, Daniel mentioned is that it is often seen as something that you have to make a decision about as you are finishing secondary school. It's also not really viewed as an option for people who are reskilling, I think, in the same way that it is in other countries. That it is a problem, especially given the fact that the Malaysian economy is changing quite rapidly, and the shelf life for skills is actually shortening, right? And what that means is, you know, instead of having a single career through your entire life, a lot of us are going to have multiple careers over the course of our lifetimes, and we are going to have to go back to school, as it were, and upskill and reskill as we go along. And the system, the way it's structured right now, doesn't lend itself to that. I think the other thing that was mentioned is, attitudes people have towards vocational education here in Malaysia, it is often viewed as something that is second class, though there's a lot of data that actually shows that it is far from second class. So for instance, the employability rate for people coming out of undergraduate degrees is about 84% now in Malaysia. For the average vocational scheme in Malaysia, it is 87%. You're actually more employable coming out of a vocational education system. And if you've done a Malaysian vocational diploma, so that's a four-year long program that's on the job training, et cetera, it's in excess of 95%. So, those perceptions that people have that it is somehow inferior, that your job prospects are worse, simply don't stand up to the facts.
Daniel, could you walk us through what a vocational education is like in Germany for a typical student who decides to take this pathway before getting employed?
Yeah, I think the main difference of the whole system in Germany compared to Malaysia is that the school leaver, if this person knows exactly what he wants to or she wants to learn, then they approach a company in that sector. So they personally apply as like a job application. They apply for an apprenticeship or for being taken in as an apprentice to the company. So it is a place and train system. So you first go to the company. The company does an interview with you. Then you sign a training contract with the company. You as a 17-year-old, maybe you have to have your parents along because you're underage, but still you sign a contract with the employer. And then you start the education in the factory, in the company. And then you go, like in Germany, it's usually the shape that you have 2 days of the week in a training institution, in a school, where you get some theoretical knowledge on maths and physics and even law. And so all that goes along. So you have 3 days of practical education and 2 days of theoretical education. And that goes with a midterm exam and up to 3.5 years, depending on the education, can be between 2 years and 3.5 years. And then you graduate from that. And what is very important and very different to the Malaysian system, it is not a train and place like we have it here. So you spend all your time of education in school and then you get placed. The opposite is happening in Germany. The young professional apprentice is confronted with procedures that will be affecting a professional life. And that is why it's so successful in Germany, because people are at early age already part of the workforce. They wear the company shirt. They show up at the same hours at the permanent employees. And then there will be a smooth transition once they have graduated. And we have less than 10 or a little bit more than 10% of dropouts that are not taken over into permanent employment by the companies. So 88% of the, or 89% of the graduates from our dual vocational training are offered a permanent employment with the company they have been training. That is a huge difference to the question that we have here in Malaysia, where people simply don't work in the profession they have been trained.
So you point to a pretty interesting feature of the German system, which is the involvement of private industry very early on. So they're actually involved in the training of the student from the very beginning. How is that divided between the private industry element of it and the education element of it? Because they still do go to school. You said they still have some sort of academic curriculum. So how are those harmonized, if I can ask?
Yeah, that's harmonized, I would say, through the chambers of commerce that we represent. Because the chambers of commerce are the ones certifying, monitoring, coordinating, and ensuring the quality of the whole system. So we make sure that the standards are applied all over Germany so that you have a huge mobility also from workforce. You can move from one city to another, show the certificate, and it's recognized because it's certified by a chamber of commerce and the chambers know each other. The trainers in the factory, of course, are factory staff. They are practitioners. These are people that work every day in the machine, in the workshop. They know exactly what to teach and what is important and what is not. And then even the trainers in the schools are also practical people. They come from the industry. And it's, I would say, almost 90% private. And also what is very important, very different to Malaysia, the apprentices are paid an apprentice allowance, which in Germany, because of the high costs of living, is more than 1,000 euros, so more than 5,000 ringgit, they receive as an allowance as an apprentice. So they come out of their education when they graduate debt-free, and it allows the person also at age 17, 18, maybe to manage a small budget of private household. So it also empowers them to lead an independent life. There's a lot of elements that make it a very mature, I would say, a very much grown-up kind of interaction between the young apprentice and the working life.
Today on The Breakfast Grill, we're discussing what makes an effective vocational education system with Daniel Birnbeck of the GMCC and Andrew Pereira of General Assembly Malaysia. How much of the German dual vocational system can be replicated here in Malaysia? We'll discuss that next. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Hello, this is The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. To mark the International Day of Education today, I'm speaking to Daniel Birnbeck, Executive Director of the German-Malaysia Chamber of Commerce, and Andrew Pereira, CEO of General Assembly Malaysia, on how we can improve the Malaysian vocational education system. Andrew, listening to how Daniel describes what the system is like in Germany, do you think that elements of that could be incorporated here in Malaysia? And what do you think would be the main obstacles to seeing those elements here?
It's a big question. So there are a number of things that I think could work quite well. So, you know, one of the things Daniel mentioned at the beginning was, you know, how a standard set, right? In Malaysia, as with many things, it's highly centralized. Government plays a really big role in how standards are set here in Malaysia. This was not always the case, right? So the vocational education system in Malaysia actually, you know, before the 1950s, 1960s, was actually governed by trade associations and guilds and chambers of commerce. So it's not that the system never existed in Malaysia. It did, just way back when. And, you know, that system, you know, allows, you know, exactly as Daniel mentioned, allows industry to have a big voice in actually saying that the skills that are required to do these roles. And, you know, it's in their best interests to make sure those skills are up to date. You know, they reflect best practices and are necessary for employment, right? And contrast that with the system today, which is where government plays a bigger role. It's more centralized. It is slower moving. And, you know, skill standards are not necessarily up to date. And many of them aren't grandfathered, you know, as they should be once they've lived out their term. So, for instance, up until quite recently, elephant husbandry was still a set of skills that you could get a qualification for here in Malaysia, despite it not probably not being the most, you know, in demand skill. And, you know, it is something that I think we could do with more of in Malaysia. So, you know, making sure that it is less centralized, you have industry play a larger role, you have the voice of industry louder, as it were, in setting standards and defining the skills that are necessary to do roles, as an example, right? Another thing that Daniel mentioned, which is interesting, you know, he talked about people actually getting a living wage, right, from working while they are studying. You know, up until recently in Malaysia, if you're in the vocational track, you would earn about 600 ringgit a month. You know, and that was recently raised about 1,000 ringgit per month. You know, and as all of us know, that is almost definitely not enough if you are, you know, that's quite far from a living wage actually in Malaysia, right? And does not make it as attractive to many of the people who are considering this as an option. Just, you know, one statistic, 80% of people who go into the vocational track here in Malaysia come from B40 backgrounds. So, you know, making sure that they're paid a living wage, they're able to work while they are, you know, and earn a decent wage while they're actually undergoing the training is something that's quite critical. And, you know, the third thing, which again, it is a feature of the German system that I think could really benefit the Malaysian vocational system here is the fact that on-the-job training component of it is a large part of it, right? So I believe the Malaysian vocational diploma right now, which is about a four-year, which is about 4 years worth of training that you go through, the minimum on-the-job requirement is about 6 months of those 4 years. And even then, you know, it is questioned that, you know, what happens during those 6 months is questionable in quality in some situations. So, you know, it definitely, the system here definitely could benefit from having more on the job training and having that feature more prominently in what it takes to actually be qualified as a, you know, in the vocational technical field.
Daniel, was there something you wanted to add?
Maybe just to object a bit to what Andrew just said. Honestly, yes, I agree there is a lot of governmental involvement, but I don't see a centralization in Malaysia. When we look at 7 ministries, and if you include the Ministry of Defense, it would be even 8 ministries supervising some kind of TVET programs. So that's not centralization. This is like all over the place. What we have in Malaysia is like everybody does it. Every governmental agency has some TVET program. And then you can easily imagine where the billions of ringgit in the budget go to. They don't go to the students. They don't go to the schools. They go for the administration and coordination of the system. And that is honestly completely inefficient because I checked at recent data that there is 150,000 enrollments in Malaysia on TVET every year and approximately 100,000 of graduates every year from any kind of TVET education or institution. There should not be any shouting from the industry that there is a lack of skilled labor because we have so many graduates. But obviously, if you take the industry as a litmus test, you would find out, obviously, the industry is not receiving what they want. And in Germany, we have the same problem, but there it is a lack of a demographic issue. We don't have kids. In Malaysia, we have a young population. We could have all these people in the right skill set, if we had the proper education system. You have to really empower your own young generation. You really have to work and not produce nice PowerPoint from the government saying, yeah, we want digital this and 5G and 6G, but you don't apply it and you don't enable the people to learn it because you leave the industry that has to teach them out of the game.
Andrew, did you want to chime in?
I did want to chime in there. And you know, Daniel's right. I use the word centralized to describe the Malaysian technical vocational education system. That's probably the wrong word. I'd say that the hand of government is strong. But actually, just refining that, it's many hands of government, which is the problem here, right? There is a lack of coordination, unfortunately. And, you know, the fact that you have so many different ministries involved. There are 1,300 TVET providers in Malaysia as well. And about half of those 1,300 are actually public providers or receive significant public funding to provide those services. So yes, there is a lack of coordination going on, and this is not a new problem. This problem has been around for many years. Even in the 11th Malaysia Plan, they were talking about the need to make sure there is more coordination, make sure that there's a single set of standards, etc. You know, we've heard about this for over a decade now. There have been improvements for sure. You know, I'm not saying there aren't. There haven't been efforts made to improve coordination. I think that was a joint technical committee set up by, you know, MQA at the Ministry of Education and the Department for Skills Development, the Ministry of Higher of Human Resources. And it's a step in the right direction, but there's so much more that needs to be done in terms of coordinating the government effort. And I agree with Daniel, in the absence of, you know, vibrant industry involvement in the system, at least having a coordinated government effort, a strong one, will help move the system in the right direction.
So essentially, government should take a step back, allow industry to come in. What role should the government be playing in this TVET ecosystem? What should they be focusing on instead of these individualized program across ministries?
I always say government should do what government knows best and let the industry do what they know best. So what does government know best? I think it is supporting or giving incentives to the industry if they invest, for instance, into training labs. If they invest into absolute high-end, newest of the best of the up-to-standard machinery, and they don't use it for production and to make profit, but they put it into training lab to train that young apprentices, that should be incentivized. Of course, the schools, the institutions, the training schools need to be sponsored by the government and set up by the government, but the trainers should be coming from the industry as well. And last, I would say, because we are also Germany is also a federal state out of 16 federal states. So what the federal government has to play as a role is the coordination and the standardization, so it doesn't go astray and become uncoordinated. So that is, I think, something where the federal government and, of course, the cooperation of the state government with the federal government is needed so that the employability and the mobility of workers is enhanced.
I would add to, you know, as Daniel mentioned, government has a role to play in convening and coordinating, but I would say additionally, government has a role in playing in creating trust in the system and creating transparency as well. What I mean by that is by creating trust, making sure that proper standards are set. I think that one of the reasons why vocational education in Malaysia is viewed as second class is because there are so many providers out there that aren't of the highest quality. And making sure that the programs and the providers are of high quality, that the qualifications and the credentials that are awarded as a result of those programs as well are something to be trusted by industry. I think government has a role to play in that as well, right? And that's something that we're facing some challenges with. And the second around transparency is, like I said earlier, the number one thing that school leavers are considering is career prospects. If you create transparency about the kinds of careers and roles that you can get into if you pursue a vocational path, that is something that government has a role to play in and can definitely help, you know, educate school leavers as to what those career options are, what are the roles that you could get into, and how do you get into those roles, right? Because there is a lack of transparency right now. I think there are people that I speak to who are actually interested in pursuing vocational and technical paths, and they don't have resources to go to actually understand what those paths are and what career prospects they have at the end of those paths, right? That is another role that government has to play as well, I think, in creating transparency for those school leavers.
I'm speaking to Daniel Birnbeck of the GMCC and Andrew Pereira of General Assembly Malaysia on technical and vocational education and training, or TVET, in Malaysia. We'll have more from this conversation after the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Thanks for staying tuned to this extended edition of the Breakfast Grill. In conjunction with the International Day of Education, we're reviewing issues in the technical and vocational education and training, or TVET, system in Malaysia and drawing lessons from the German experience. So I know German industry is very has a lot of buy-in into TVET. But I think, as you both spoke about, the Malaysian industries don't seem to have that same buy-in because they're not getting the trainees or the skilled workers that they want. How do we change that? How do we flip that balance so that Malaysian industries will be more invested into, I suppose, forming or getting more involved in the TVET system?
What we always hear is that Malaysian industry, especially Malaysian SMEs, they are not used to the role of being educators. They are not used to be involved in that. That's something the government provides. And why should I spend money? And then the usual phrase comes, and then I educate and I invest into that young person. And then he moves over to and gets pinged away by my competitor. And then this other guy gets it for free. Yes. And that's then the answer, the point in time where we always say, yes, if you don't invest into your staff, you have uneducated, unskilled people in your company. So there is no other way than to invest into education. It is for your own benefit. And our research shows that after 18 months of the 42 months that the education in German programs last, after 18 months, there is a break even of a profitability of a trainee. So after 18 months, he becomes productive for your company. You don't pay money, you earn money with him because he's already involved in the production process. So it is much cheaper than people think, but I agree, in Malaysia, it's still a way to go because simply they have no experience with that.
Right. It's a mindset shift, not just on the parents or the public, but really even companies need to kind of change how they view this TVET and how it can work.
And just to jump in there, we conducted research, we produced a white paper at General Assembly, which shows that it is cheaper for an organization to build its own talent than it is for an organization to buy talent, right? So the numbers, I mean, it makes sense from a financial perspective as well. You know, you're not doing, it's not national service that you're doing over here, right? You are doing it for your own, enlightened self-interest as well. So organizations can benefit from investing in programs to build, you know, not just talent, you know, a talent pipeline for people who are coming into new positions, you know, fresh graduates, but also internally as well as a way to accredit and upskill existing employees.
Mm. I want to cover the issue of what types of sectors or vocation or occupations are covered under TVET. So I feel like TVET has a lot of it. You think machinery, mechanical, you know, a lot of the perception is towards that angle. But it could also apply to care work. It could also apply to other essential services that that don't really get that attention. And I'm just wondering if you have thoughts on whether, you know, that sort of relation is present in Malaysia, whether that's an avenue that really needs to be kind of further emphasized, or how that is in Germany, whether, TVET also encompasses nursing or encompasses, you know, elderly care. How does that work?
We also lost the elephant husbandry recently. Yes, but of course, we also do hospitality business and all kinds of industry management, like office management and technical management and logistics operations management. That is something we also offered here in Malaysia, but it was not so much attractive, I would say, because this is just a fact. Because we go for with the industry. If the industry demands it, then we do it. If they don't, we leave it. If they obviously seem to say we still can hire from the market, from the job market, we can still hire people that have some skills in office management and industrial logistics management, so we don't need to train. But mechatronics and electronic automation technicians and precision machining, that you cannot find on the markets. There is simply no education that is equal to the demand of the industry. So what we hear and what has the title, maybe the similar title in the Malaysian education system, is obviously not up to par. So there they need to educate and they say, okay, we have no other choices. And as Andrew said, it is better to educate yourself and than to try to hire from the market and reskill them, upskill them or whatever. There is a lot of professions under the 325 that are known to be in Germany. There's a huge market for that. Hospitality also would be something where I see the tourism industry, there should be a lot of more training. But honestly, I see also from the market, this is obviously one of the lowest ranking jobs and many people just hire, work for maybe 1 or 2 years, and then they move on upwards. So it is not reasonable to a hotel or a restaurant to invest in that because it's a huge fluctuation. We would be happy to also cooperate with hospitality and other institutions to train, but it's not a demand at the moment.
You know, the other area I see as, you know, it actually is within the NOS, the occupational skill standards, you know, under, I think there's an IT bucket, digital skills, right? So there is huge demand now for all sorts of digital roles, you know, software engineering, cybersecurity specialists, et cetera, I can go on. And making sure that, you know, there are, and many of these roles don't actually require you to have a degree, and there is no generally accepted form of certification for a lot of these roles in terms of what is required to actually go and do that job out in industry. So yes, there is a lot of scope for vocational technical education in those areas as well. And, you know, LinkedIn produces this report every year talking about the most in demand skills. And I think the most recent one that came out, about half of those roles are skills that you can develop from technical and vocational education. But that's not something that people talk about very often.
Gentlemen, this has been such a fascinating and far-ranging conversation. And really, there have been a lot of gaps in the system that you've both pointed out, which are going to take, it's not going to happen overnight. But I think let's try to end, I guess, on a note of optimism. What would you be looking forward to that would indicate that we're heading in the right direction in TVET? You know, indicators, like what do you think will give you hope that TVET is improving or is getting better in the country, you know, in the minute or so that we have?
I think already hearing that the government has announced TVET to be the game changer already fills my heart with joy, because maybe it's just words, but at least it shows the perception, and perception, as we know, is reality. So it is really something that we build on. And since the Pakatan Harapan manifesto, we were very delighted to see that the German dual vocational training system is seen as something that that Malaysia is looking forward to, and to in order to incorporate it even further. And we are happy to assist in any means, in any ways, not on a profit-oriented base, but on a kind of a non-governmental and cooperation. And we are happy to see what we can do together. And I think the industry is now, because of the crisis, absolutely desperately seeking for solutions. And that's what we would like to provide. Yeah.
All right. Final word to you, Andrew.
Yeah, there are two reasons why I'm hopeful. You know, one, exactly as Daniel mentioned, government does seem to recognize that this is a priority. If you created a word cloud from the 12th Malaysia Plan, I'm pretty sure TVET would be one of the biggest words there. So, you know, it does show commitment. It does show commitment to investing in the system, which I'm very encouraged by. And the second reason why I'm hopeful is industry does what industry is best does best, right? Which is, if they see a problem and the skills gap and the skills mismatch is a problem, they're already working on ways to solve it. Organizations like mine, General Assembly of Malaysia, we work very closely together with enlightened employers who you know, are trying to develop the skills necessary to continue innovating, to continue you know, being competitive in the market. And you know, even if the system takes a bit longer to catch up to that, industry is already working on developing those skills and, you know, testing out different ideas. And yes, when the system catches up and we can get those certified, you know, according to the Malaysian vocational education system, that will be wonderful. And I'm hopeful that that innovation will continue.
Thank you very much both for speaking with me today. I've been speaking to Andrew Pereira, the CEO of General Assembly Malaysia, and Daniel Bernbeck, Executive Director of the Malaysian German Chamber of Commerce. This has been The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.